It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
Fillmore's finest, Monte Hill. The pride of the Excelsior, Joe Butcher, Boy Shasky.
Take him out!
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
Against the 49ers again for Cooper Kupp. This one is juggle picked. There goes Hufanga. Hufanga, touchdown San Francisco. Pick six. Oh my gosh!
October 3rd, 2022, Monday Night Football. And the return of Talanoa Hufanga this week at SoFi Stadium. And maybe that's the jolt the 49ers need, because I'm not sure who's going to be ready as we play We Ready, We Ready, We Ready, a theme on the morning roast on game day. I'm just not sure who's going to be ready. Is Charvarius Ward going to be ready? Is George Kittle, who's coming off a dynamic game against the Minnesota Vikings, will he be ready? Well, I guess we'll figure it out. We'll see who practices today for the San Francisco 49ers, but it is the walking wind for both teams here, which is evening up this matchup. If you're a gambler, you probably want to stay away from this game, but boy, the Niners got to win this one, and the margins are getting extra thin here with all the injuries going on in San Francisco. Good morning to everybody out there getting off the graveyard shift. Good morning to all the overnight dancers, all the janitors, all the street cleaners, all the sweepers, all the people, as Shasky pointed out, waiting for the Apple, iPhone?
iPhone 16. There was a full line of people.
Damn.
Dreamforce was ruining my way in, and then 6th Street, there were 7,000 ambulances and fire, whatever the hell. I don't even know what's going on. I'm sure 17 encampments caught on fire because, you know, free drug trade going on right there on 6th Street. But regardless, I saw a bunch of people at Union Square, 50 or so, lined up, waiting for the iPhone.
Yeah, and I think the Apple Watch 2 is going to be in stores, I think maybe today.
I have an Apple Watch Ultra. What right. Apple Watch?
There's a new Apple Watch coming out. Anna was telling me.
Cool.
I told her, I said, you know what? I maybe just bite the bullet and get one.
I like the Apple Watch.
They're whatever. But just to have something to check my steps and all that stuff,
yeah,
because the phone is not accurate or whatnot. Yeah. But it's just, you know, some of the Apple products and that watch. I forget my watches everywhere. So I'm a liability when it comes to that stuff.
I never wore a watch ever in my entire life. I didn't like how it felt. I'm not a jewelry guy. I don't even wear my wedding ring, you know, and not because I don't love my wife. It's just because I don't like jewelry. I'm not one of those, you know, individuals that wore like a chain or any of those stuff. None of that stuff. It was always stuff that could get what I felt like ripped off me, you know, or, you know, get me stuck up. And so I went to the Apple Watch, I don't know, 2-3 years ago to track all my workouts. And I'm telling you, Bonte, it changes your life.
It shames
you into wanting to work out.
I'll love for myself. I'm going to dare myself to forget my wedding ring one day and see how Anna reacts to that.
Don't say that again.
Some wives are cool with this. Some wives aren't.
Teach their own.
It is what it is.
My wife knows I love her dearly.
Right.
And, you know, she just assumes that, you know.
Hey, you would look sick with a gold rope around your neck, though. Boy, if you had the little taco meat showing, you got a little chain, Shasky. Yeah. Boy, you look saucy. You should think about it.
Anyway. I always think about when I see Tony Soprano, and he's got the chain on the right side of the hand. He's got the gold bracelet, watch, and then he's got the bracelet. Can you wear that all the time? Like, I don't know. It feels like it would get in the way of stuff.
Well, Anna's grandmother tried to get me a bracelet this past week, and she goes, about to. And I was like, nah, I'm not a bracelet guy. Nah, I'm not that. You know, I'm not trying to look like I'm some, you know, gangster. So, nah, keep it off of me or whatnot. But, no, you can stick it on all the time, man. It's pretty cool.
Speaking of gangsters,
You get a chain around your neck, though. Now I'm thinking about it, Shasky. You look kind of sick with that. You look like Operation Shasky chain.
I don't invest
Operation
in jewelry.
Shasky
to those
chain.
That do, I know it holds its value for a long time. I try to, you know, in the words of Bonte, I'm trying to invest in real estate, you know, working on that ninth house. But that's just the way I roll. I'm watching a jewelry show last night with a gangster in it, The Penguin on HBO.
Right,
and
no
let me
spoilers.
Tell you,
no, just
it's
just,
excellent.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. That's it.
That's all I'm going to say.
Did you watch it, Spinotti?
For a reimagined character?
Yeah.
It's really, I like it. They did a great job.
Stop right there.
Good hour.
Stop it.
Stop right there.
Are you ready to watch it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought about putting it on last night, but I was on daddy duty. His dad had a hair appointment and all that stuff.
Oh, I know all about those.
I don't watch those things around Chaz right now because I don't want to see that stuff. Bed. Yeah, but
so
then,
that Jets
but
she, game
she
ended.
Goes to get, but she goes to bed. And last night, of course, is like Papa. I was like, just come on.
That's
in.
What happened this
come
morning with the little guy. Little guy, 2 a.m, screaming, howling. Next thing I know, I roll over. He's in the bed. He's like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, oh, they love it.
I'm
it's
up,
like playtime.
You're up.
It's
I'm
playtime
up, we're
for
here.
Them. See, as a matter of fact, I got out the shower this morning. I heard the door open. She got out of her bed because Mama, I guess, when she came home, put her back in her bed. She came in with her Minnie Mouse doll. It's like, it is Suna. And what that means in Russian is, come here. And she came over. I was like, go get in the bed on my side.
How do you say big game in Russian?
That I do not know.
Because this is a big game this weekend. This is what I would call a swing game, meaning momentum swinger. Do you swing the momentum back to the Rams to get life back into their season? Or do you swing momentum back into the Niners to just start feeling good and win a game when you're not at full strength? Not even close to full strength. This is a big momentum game.
Oh, it's a huge game. I don't know if it's a legacy game, but it's a must have, must win. Now Stafford, I believe, is 1-5 against the Niners since he came over from the LA Rams, if I'm not mistaken. 1-5. They've had his number. Hell, even in an NFC championship game, I know he had to drive and he hit Cooper Kupp over Kayvon Williams, who was compromised with an ankle injury, and Cooper Kupp ran around in front of Rocco and I say, damn, that guy's good. But he threw a couple up. He threw the pick in the end zone to Jimmy Ward. And he tried to throw a pick to Jaquaski Tartt. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole. We know what happened there. Scoreboard, Jaquaski Tartt, and we had him on the show. Remember Spadone? We had him on the show the next year. And he was, he was transparent about everything that happened. He wanted to get paid. He never played it out of the football again. So, poor guy, man. But Stafford will throw him up. And we played the pick six by Talanoa Hufanga on Monday Night Football back on October the 3rd, 2022. And maybe this is the jolt that the 49ers need, because it feels like they need some energy. They need an infusion of energy. Fred Ward is flying around. He's hitting people. Nick Bosa, I thought, played better. When you watch the tape over and over, and every time you watch the game, I was like, all right, he had a better game than I thought. There was a couple plays against the run that I didn't like, but overall, I thought Bosa was solid. Now, we need him to be great. We don't need him to be solid. He's got to be great. It is what it is. When I look at that other side of the football, who's going to give this team juice on the offensive side of the football? If George Kittle's not playing, because everybody's so focused on, well, man, that's another receiver. It's the run game for me. It is the run game with George Kittle. George Kittle in the run game is such a factor that if he doesn't go with his hamstring tightness, all of a sudden, Jordan Mason running the ball. What's the run game going to look like without George Kittle? And how many? We got to sign a tight end. Who's going to play backup tight end? Kyle Juszczyk? I mean, this is bad.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, we've been clamoring for a second tight end for multiple years. But I still think they can find a way to win this one. You know, I mean, Saubert made some plays the last week. I mean, it's not like he can't make a couple plays. He is a veteran. They do seem to like those veteran backup tight ends. I don't know.
I'm just looking at the run game with George Kittle because he means so much there.
Well, when it comes to inline blocking.
No, he is. He is, no doubt about it. But who's behind these guys at tight end? I'm looking at the tight end depth chart right now, and you got Jake Tongs, number 88.
Yeah.
So he'll probably get the call.
Was he an undrafted free agent?
Yeah, it looks like it.
I think he would. Anyway, but he gained a couple of plays in the third preseason game, if memory serves. Look, I get your worry about the offense. I'm watching that Jets game last night, and I'm watching the Patriots, and I'm saying to myself, all right, is Hassan Reddick ever going to play for the Jets? And if he's not, I know it's going to cost an arm and a leg to pay him. Like, don't worry about the finances of next year. Everyone, oh, Purdy's got to get. I don't care about next year. All I care about is this year. And if I have to solidify my pass rush and go get Hassan Reddick and give him X amount of dollars to just get through this season, I think it might be worth it. And I know, like, the Jets are kind of in a screwy spot here with him where they've got to make a decision whether they're going to pay him. Is he going to show up? I think it's week 5 or week 6. He's got to make a determination if he's going to play this year. Otherwise, his year goes to the following year and he can't hit free agency. If Hassan Reddick can be had, and this is an organization, the Jets, that you do have friends, Robert Saleh, a part of that building, I don't know. Like I think it might be worth, and I get your point on backup tight end, and I understand, look, the offense right now is depleted. But like, if I could solidify my pass rush, why not?
Well, I think Yannick is a guy. That you may have to get because the Jets just lost Jermaine Johnson. He's out for the year with an Achilles tear. They have Will McDonald on the other side from Iowa State, their first-round pick. He's going to be fine. I think the Jets are going to do everything in their power to keep Hassan Reddick in the building to try to get him on the football field to solidify their defense because I think watching the New York Jets, Niners may have caught them at the right time. And I say may because I don't know where the Jets are going to be, but it feels like they're getting better and better with every game under Aaron Rodgers. Now, the Patriots, we all believe that they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league, but they've come out this season. They beat Cincinnati. They played tough against Seattle, lost in overtime in their home opener. I don't think they're a slouch defensively, but the Jets had their way. They had their way, and Rodgers seems to get getting more comfortable by the snap. And their defense is flying around, hitting people. They were blitzing like crazy yesterday. I think Saleh blitzed like 15 times yesterday. They were talking about it on a post-game show. But I believe the Jets will try to keep Hassan Reddick in that building whatsoever because they just lost a pass rusher.
And
Jermaine Johnson just went out for the season with an Achilles tear. So they're thinking the same thing, like, our depth is depleted. We got to try to figure this out.
Ponte, they traded for a guy who wanted a new contract and then didn't give him a new contract. Like, it's classic Jets. All I'm saying is there's a reason there's a stalemate right now, and I think anything's on the table, and I would just give them a call and just see what's going on there. Because clearly the Niners need defensive line help, and it feels like that's been the saga for many, many years. Look, in Ndakwe, Hassan Reddick, we're on the same page here. Like, they need to go solidify that. I feel a little more comfortable on the offensive side of the ball, even though I know it's not perfect right now. That is Shanahan's,
right,
you know, side of the ball. And I feel confident that he can create some stuff with lesser talent. It's the defensive side. You got to have the hogs.
Well, yeah, no doubt. You know, my biggest X factor going into the season, we were all talking X factors. I think at the summit and on this show, my biggest X factor is no doubt edge depth. Edge depth was my biggest X factor. I don't think we have enough depth on the edge. There's no doubt. So I hear trying to make a trade for Hassan Reddick. I don't see it. Maybe it happens. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know what the Niners would give up for that. I don't know what the Jets would want to give up for that. And do the Niners, are they interested in giving up picks now, knowing that there could be a lot of roster change next season? There could be a lot of roster turnover with all the big money contracts that are going to be coming off the books, but guys who want new money, including Brock Purdy, Diamador Lenore, Charvarius Ward. There's a lot of guys up to Hufanga you got to make a decision on. Drake Greenlaw, I think, is a guy who's eligible for a new contract as well. So I'm not sure John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan want to give up a lot of picks right now. They may need those picks to fill out their roster at a cheaper cost here. So is Yannick a free agent? Yeah, that may be easier to do, but we're on the same page when it comes to edge depth. I'm just looking offensively here. You don't have Debo. You don't have Christian McCaffrey. The Lions try to work itself out, and now you don't have your best blocking. I mean, he may be your best run blocker, period, outside of Trey Williams and George Kittle. I'm dead serious here. And so now the onus is going to be on Brandon Ayuk to produce in the pass game. Now, maybe the Niners just say, you know what, we're going to take it old school here and run the ball 50 times. I saw the Packers last week run the ball over 40 times and pass the ball 14 times with Malik Willis. Maybe we do that with Brock Purdy. I have no idea, but this is a must-win game. You got to win this game no matter what. In these next 2 weeks, whether it's against the Patriots that we saw last night or this Sunday against the Rams, you just got to win at all costs until guys get back, man. Because it is the walking wounded. Guys who were in training camp, guys who were out of training camp, everybody's hurt right now.
I don't care about how it gets done. I don't care about the style points and all that. But there's one element that I do think matters. You got to be able to heat up Stafford.
Yep.
And I think that if they can't heat up Stafford against this offensive line, well, then now we've got some serious issues on our defensive line. Because this is a depleted offensive line with no weapons on the outside. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're going to have to like worry and, hey, back off of Puka, back off of Cooper Kupp. Don't bring the heat because they'll kill you on the blitz. Like, I understand. This is a bunch of nobody. The other receiver, I know everyone's just acquired him in the last year's what's the guy's name, Williams or whatever, whoever their third wide receiver is that had a pretty nice couple of first 2 weeks. There's a bunch of guys on the outside that no one's ever heard of. And this is deeper, you know, fantasy league. So I think our secondary needs to step up with the Charvarius Ward thing. It sounded like from Matt Barros and some of the other people that follow the team, they were just being overly cautious.
Yeah.
Kittle feels a little more unsure.
Yep.
I don't know. They both practiced on Wednesday, and then both came in on Thursday, and I guess they were sore, or it was more sore than anticipated. But it's not good.
No, it's not good at all. We'll talk to Cam Emmett about that at 8 o'clock, about the injury report. Cam Emmett from the Bay Area News Group. DeMarcus Robinson, Tyler Johnson, Jordan Whittingham, and Tutu Atwell are your receivers for the L.A. Rams. They're going four deep there. They may be running the ball tough with Kyron Williams and Blake Corum. So, first of all, yeah, you need to heat up Stafford. There's no doubt about it. With this beat-up offensive line, heat up Matthew Stafford. However, they're going to try to run the ball as well, control the clock and control the stick. So, can you shut down a running game? And having Hufanga back, I think, helps your run defense. Him flying around at the line of scrimmage, being Palomalu 2.0. Now, I'm not calling him Palomalu, Troy. He's a Hall of Famer. I get it. But this guy flies around, and his game kind of mimics Palomalu with the way he moves around pre-snap. So, Kyron Williams in this run game. The Niners, Ty Chandler and Aaron Jones ran the ball very well against the 49ers
inside
last week.
And outside.
Inside, outside, did not matter. They ran the ball. Kyron Williams is a problem. Pass game, run game, he's physical. He falls forward. He never gets hit back. Now, Fred Warner's going to be shadowing him, looking for the kill shots here, right? But you got to slow down the run game. That's where it starts. They'll get to Stafford. It's Stafford and throw a couple up. But you got to start with the run game. You got to shut down the run game and control the line of scrimmage.
Am I giving Stafford too much love? I think of him as a guy, when the chips are down, I actually think that he plays some of his best football. It feels like when he's getting tagged and peppered, he will have a propensity to just throw one up. And when you allow him to start cooking back there, I worry about what's McVay got up his sleeve. Even though they're the wounded, duck right here, I'm not counting them out. I think that they're still a very dangerous opponent.
Well, if Kittle doesn't play, it evens up the playing field, right? You already don't have McCaffrey. You don't have Debo. You don't play without George Kittle offensively. What is it going to look like against this beat-up Rams defense that's been giving up yards? They've given up so many rushing yards. I mean, it's not even funny.
If you're Purdy's agent, though, does a small part of you, if you're his agent or whatever, somebody in his family who's sick of the negativity, is there a small part of you that's like, I want to see Brock Purdy do this with just Brandon Ayuk?
Oh.
Because you're that confident.
Yeah, I think there's some cynics out there who want to see Brock Purdy in this situation.
What about you, Bonte Hill? Do you want to see that?
I just want to win a damn football game. I don't care about the money right now, man. I'm in football mode. I'm game to game. We've talked all offseason about, what is this guy going to pay? You got to wait for him to get paid, and you got to save money. I don't really. Honestly, God, I don't care about his contract right now.
Okay.
But I know there's people, and I'll play the game. I'll play the game.
Well, I was going to say, I admit it. Is this a safe space?
Go ahead.
Is this a safe space? All right, I'll admit it. I know everyone else is afraid to admit it. I do. I'm fascinated. I want to see what Brock looks like with just Brandon Ayuk and a backup running back. I do. And I think he can do it. Like, I really do. I'm not just BSing you here. Like, I think he's a really good player. I think he works with a lot of different personnel around him. I think he's perfect for Shanahan's system. I have the same questions as everyone else. It's okay. It doesn't mean you don't like him. It doesn't mean you don't think he's good. But, to say, what does Joe Montana look like without Jerry Rice? That's a fair question to ask. I don't think you're some hater. I really don't. Can we be reasonable? I'm fascinated. I wanted to see what Mahomes looked like without Tyreek Hill. A part of me wants to see what Mahomes looks like without Kelsey. Well, it's okay to say, I kind of want to see what it looks like.
Well,
is it horrific? Is it good? Is it great? Like, I think a lot of people can be won over. I do.
I think people already... Well, let's continue that conversation. Let's continue that conversation, because to a lot of people, it does matter. It does matter. River Island's guest line, Patrick Peterson. Remember him? Patrick Peterson, longtime Arizona Cardinal. He's now in the podcast world. He's in the podcast world. He's going to join us at 6:50. Kirk Morrison, 5'2". He's actually out in Louisville, Kentucky, covering Louisville this week. Louisville and Georgia Tech. He'll be on that call for that game. He was actually in West Virginia, Pittsburgh last week, which was a good college football game. 5-2, we love Kirk Morrison on the roast. He'll join us at 7:20. We got shameless shout out to 7:45. Cam Emmett, 8 o'clock. Cam Emmett, 8 o'clock. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? What's coming up on The Game is brought to you by St. Martin, Lucky, California. Are you eager to see Brock Purdy play without all these weapons? Does this matter to you? Ooh-wee. It's going to be juicy. He is 0-3 without Debo Samuel. 0-3 without Debo.
That's tough.
I think there's a Brandon Ayuk question, too. What does Ayuk look like without all the weapons? You guys all want to, and whoever, the, hey, he's not a number one. Look, let's see it.
He'll be doubled all game long.
Oh, yeah, I dislike the Niners. Everybody know that. I don't like the Niners at all. They don't like us. It's just a rivals. Every time we play, it's a dogfight, and that's how it is, you know. No love at all towards them guys. You know, I really dislike them, and, you know, we'll see them twice this year, so.
Debo, I know you've had some back and forth with Aaron Donald. I don't know if that's friendly or not. Have you actually ever met Aaron Donald or talked to him?
No, I haven't.
Would you like to?
No, I'm not pressed for a conversation.
Now, back to the Morning Roast with Bonte and Shasky.
Well. Both those guys are not going to be in this game on Sunday. Aaron Donald and Deebo Samuel. It's the first time the Niners have not seen Aaron Donald in over a decade. And he's kicking the Niners' ass for many, many years, although it didn't always translate on the scoreboard. But he got the one that mattered to us a lot. And that was the NFC Championship game out in 2022, in January of that year. So he got that one.
Might have been his finest moment.
Yeah, I mean, the final
drive. Fourth quarter.
Dominated. He took over, a la Chris Jones. And Deebo Samuel's had some monster moments against the LA Rams, Monday Night Football. I mean, he's dominated the Rams. Hell, he kept the Niners in that game in the NFC Championship game with a nice little gun run, and he scored four touchdowns. So they're going to be missing some juice here. No Aaron Donald on one sideline. I wonder if he's going to come back if the Rams get back in it. And there's no Deebo Samuel on the other side for the 49ers, as he's going to be out for a couple weeks, maybe a few weeks, with the calf strain. So no Deebo, no Aaron Donald. And now it's Brock Purdy and friends. And Brock Purdy may have to go about his business without George Kittle, Chris McCaffrey, and Deebo Samuel. We know those two, the latter two, are out. C-Mac and Deebo Samuel, but George Kittle on the fence did not practice yesterday due to hamstring tightness. So a lot of people, as you just said, Joe, and it's kind of a conversation we had in training camp, like, well, if Ayuk gets traded, well, let's see what Brock looks like without Brandon Ayuk. And I kind of backed up off of that. I was like, I want Brock to have all these weapons. You need weapons to play in this game. You need all the weapons. But I do think there's a lot of people out there, minor fans, because you got to make a decision after the season, how much you're going to pay them, 60, 50, 40 million. It's something that's going to be talked about all season long. But I think there are a lot of Niner fans who are eager to see what he looks like without all his premium weapons.
Think about Stafford, the guy they're going up against. How many Lions fans who caped up for Stafford were like, I just want to see what he looks like in a better, more well-run organization?
Yeah.
Right? Like, we do this all the time. You know, we do this all the time. And I was thinking, like, I used to defend Steve Young all the time, right? And I remember hearing some of other people that would, like, bash Montana when Montana was leaving and he's going to the Chiefs. We'll see what he looks like when he's away from Bill Walsh and Holmgren. We'll see what he looks like when he's not throwing to Jerry Rice and playing with this team. And he goes to Marty Schottenheimer's team. And he's throwing to, like, Willie Davis, okay? Who no one will remember, right? No, he was handing off to Marcus Allen. But Marcus, similar to Joe, like, felt like a vagabond, like he was an afterthought because of what had happened with him and the Raiders. And, you know, he's handed off to Kimball Anders. But it also proved, like, Joe was special. Yeah. Joe could do it with just about anybody. Yep. You know, when Tom Brady left Bill Belichick, how many people were asking, like, can he do it away from Belichick? Can he do it away from McDaniels and not be in that system? Now, he had great personnel in Tampa Bay, but it was the Tampa Bay Bucks who were known for just being dysfunctional and mediocre. So I think that we do this in sports all the time. And we ask these questions all the time. And I think it's fair to fascinate. Now, is it optimal? No, it's optimal to have five studs out there that you're handing off to and throwing to. But there is a part of me that's fascinated to see what it looks like. And I think that you can gain a lot of respect if you're on the outside of the Brock Purdy, I think he's really, really good circle. Let's say you're on the outside and you're skeptical. Can he win you over this weekend?
So let me throw a hypothetical then. What if the Niners win, I don't know, 17-16? He throws a pick, he throws one touchdown, throws for about 190 yards. How are people going to feel about that?
Just win, right? Isn't that the ultimate?
Yeah, but to your point, there's also the Brock Purdy scoreboard. So are people going to say, boy, Boy, he struggled with how to sweat his boy. You can't give this guy all the money.
I think you just got to find a way to win, even if it's ugly. Because we've gained a lot of respect on quarterback. For example, the other night, Caleb Williams, they lost to the Texans.
Right.
They didn't look great offensively at all. He got pounded. And I came walking away from that game going, that guy's really tough. I don't know how good he's going to be, but I respect him. He came out and I gained more respect for the individual. So, no, it doesn't always happen, but there are times where it can look really ugly and somehow you come away having more respect for the individual.
Well, that's kind of where I fall here. I don't really care what Brock Purdy's numbers look like. I'm not looking to see, you know, I'm not going to get any extra excitement knowing that, oh boy, Brock Purdy, boy, he's got to go out there without Ayuk. I'm eager to see this, man. I want to see him prove that he's a really good quarterback. I actually worry a little bit thinking, boy, knowing that if George Kittle doesn't play, then the Rams and their defense, and let me look at their defensive coordinator, Mr. Shula here, Chris Shula, part of Shula lineage. Shula's always been in the NFL, feels like forever. They're always going to be a Shula, but what is he going to do with Brandon Ayuk here?
It's always going to be a Shula.
What are they going to do with Brandon Ayuk? Now that he got Brandon Ayuk, will they double Ayuk? Will they bracket Jennings? How do they play this here defensively? Because if you do take away Ayuk, because I think the bigger spotlight, our YouTube poll question right now, YouTube poll question is, who's got the bigger spotlight on them, Brandon Ayuk or Brock Purdy? I think if Purdy struggles, you can make the excuse for him that he didn't have C-Mac. He didn't have Debo. He didn't have George Kittle. The run game wasn't effective. You put too much on his plate. They took away his number one wide receiver. I actually think the spotlight is bigger on number 11, Brandon Ayuk, to prove that, hey, I'm a bona fide number one. I know the game plan's coming towards me. I know they're shadowing me. I know they're going to bracket me. They're going to press me. They're going to have somebody over the top, blah, blah, blah. I got to go out there and ball out and go get over 100 yards. I almost think the spotlight's bigger on Brandon Ayuk because of the way this past summer played out for Brandon Ayuk and with the fan base, with the 49ers, and the way he has started slow in the first 2 weeks, which we all anticipated anyway due to the hold-in. So, Brock, I think there would be a built-in excuse from a lot of people if he does struggle statistically and they win.
That's a fair counter. You know, I just always come back to the quarterback gets the most heat just in general. Yeah. But you know, where Ayuk is currently with the fan base in terms of approval rating, it's not high. There are a lot of people waiting for that man's downfall. So I don't deny you on that. I think about some ugly wins where we felt really good about a quarterback. And I go back to the Jimmy Garoppolo Pittsburgh Steeler game at home where you always say, like, Tomlin came walking across, like, you got a quarterback. Yeah, and it was an ugly game. Yeah. I think it was like a 13-12 or...
It was nasty. It was five turnovers. Yeah, it was hard hitting.
It wasn't clean.
It was
bad. But you walked away from that game going, I think we got something here,
3-0.
Right?
3-0.
So, and I think Purdy has a long enough resume that proves that when they're at full strength, he's pretty freaking good. Now you got to check one of those boxes of, can you find a way to win one when the chips are really down against you?
But here's the deal. You say that quarterback always gets the most heat. And I agree with that.
Typically.
Because, yeah, typically, right? Because week two, coming off the Minnesota loss, who got the most heat coming off that Minnesota loss?
I think Shanahan, because of the way they got outcoached.
Shanahan got all the heat.
Yeah.
Shanahan got all. Hell, Brock Purdy threw two picks in Minnesota last year in the fourth quarter. And we used concussion gate. Oh, he was concussed.
Yeah, I don't think everyone, but.
But a majority, because even David Lombardi, who I respect as a journalist, I do respect him. I know we make fun of him sometimes, but I respect the hell out of Lombardi. He does his work. He does his research. He puts in the work. He does. You cannot take that away from him. David Lombardi from SF Standard. But he even was coming at me. It's like, well, context matters, and he had a concussion. So,
well, you're out
and even
there.
The Cincinnati game the next week, I don't think Brock got a lot of heels. Hey, he was playing with a concussion. The Cleveland game, we went to Jake Moody. We went to other guys. So I don't know here with Brock Purdy if he's faced that same heat as other quarterbacks around the league. Even coming off the Super Bowl.
No, but
we looked
at Shanahan
and Wilkes.
No, I agree with the point in that he doesn't get as much heat as that. Like, for example, like when Lamar Jackson loses, Lamar Jackson gets crushed.
Oh.
But Lamar's also making $180 million.
There's
and
no
so,
doubt.
Like, I look at Dak Prescott. When Dak was making $500,000 or whatever it was when he was a fourth rounder, I don't think he got even close to the criticism that he's gotten since signing the first contract, the big contract, and then the second one, right? And so I think the spotlight grows and grows and grows. The longer you play, the more money you make. You know, how many year after year, maybe disappointments that you have, like Josh Allen right now. Like Josh Allen, there's a light on him. And good or bad, when he wins, there's style points because of how much he makes and because of how many, you know, good players they've had to say goodbye to afford that roster. So, yeah, I do believe that to an extent, Purdy has been sheltered from certain criticism. But you know how this fan base works and you know how that position works.
Well, right now, I would say I think this Sunday, Brennan Ayuk has maybe a slightly bigger spotlight on him without all these weapons. Like if Juwan Jennings outshines Brennan Ayuk and they win, well, people are going to be like, we overpaid Brennan Ayuk. We should have just traded him. That's what people are going to say. You know that.
I think that's a season-long convo, but I get what you're saying.
But then we do this week to week. I agree. We should let the season play out, but we know how it works in the NFL. We don't let that happen at all. All right, what's coming up in the game brought to you by Fremont Bank Celebrity, 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Patrick Peterson, legend. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. He's going to join us on the other side to talk some football here and pump his podcast, First and Pod. He's now part of the Odyssey family, so we'll introduce him. We'll welcome him to the Odyssey family. Patrick Peterson, longtime corner for the Arizona Cardinals, will join us on the other side here on 95.7 The Game.
Shohei's not going to jail.
Alright,
check this out. This is San Leandro Mo, and you're listening to
95.7
The Game, the Morning Roast with
Fontaine and Shaq. Alright, man, this segment is sponsored by Go to State Lumber, serving the Bay Area for three generations. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit GoToStateLumber.com. Patrick Peterson will join us in moments, a three-time first-team All-Pro, eight-time Pro Bowler, 2010's All-Decade Team. It was a punt return yards leader. I mean, the dude did everything. LSU, I got to ask him how he escaped the state of Florida and attended LSU. I don't like that.
You know what Spadoni said at the break as I was scarfing down a Bob's Donut?
What was that?
Shout out Bob's. Excellent donuts. The best. I had a chocolate, then I had a glaze. I went double. Okay. He goes, I think Patrick Peterson's last interception came against Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, boy.
We got to ask him. I bet he remembers.
Oh, I bet you remember. Yeah, he remembers all his interceptions.
You have to.
We have Patrick Peterson, right? We have Mike. Patrick Peterson. We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Patrick Peterson, host of the Odyssey original podcast, First and Pod, and insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious. And he joins us on the River Islands guest line. Patrick Peterson, good morning and welcome to the Odyssey family.
Good morning, guys. I'm happy to be a part of the family, man. I really am.
Oh, man. So I got to get this one out the way. Before we talk about your career, talk about football and everything like that, I understand you're a Florida kid, and I'm a Florida State fan. Don't ask me how. I'm from San Francisco. Don't ask me how. How the hell did you escape the state of Florida and attend LSU? I mean, I know LSU is like DBU and they're now wide receiver U, but how did the state of Florida let you escape from that state and go to Louisiana to play football?
Man, it was a difficult decision for me, but at that time, Florida State was going through sanctions. University of Miami was pretty much going on a downhill. Really didn't like the University of Florida, so I started opening up my options, and I felt like LSU was the best option for me because going there, pretty much their whole secondary was leaving. They never had a Jim Thorpe winner there, so that was my goal, to be the first Jim Thorpe winner at a university. So that mission was pretty much set and accomplished. And I pretty much became a trendsetter at a university by putting them on a map to be known for something, and that's DBs.
Patrick, was your last career interception against Jimmy G?
No. My last interception was Bengals. They had a backup in. I cannot remember his name.
Was it Brandon Allen? Sunday.
And it might have been Browning.
Browning.
Yeah, it might have been Browning. Yeah, I think it was Browning in the end zone, Sunday Night Football. So that was my last interception. But Jimmy was my 35th interception of my career.
The fact that you know it was 35th. So
I
we don't have to do this right now, but you could probably name each interception ball, your first, second, third, and you know exactly what quarterback you got it against?
Yeah, I do know majority of my interceptions for the most part, the quarterbacks. I know I got Tom Brady, I got Sam Bradford a whole bunch of times. matter of fact, man, the Rams was like my favorite team playing against, especially early on in my career.
Fisher.
Every time I played him, every time I played against him, I got an interception or a punt return for a touchdown.
I love that. We have a sound drop that we always play, and you know, we have like PTSD Jimmy G, because just losing the way we did to the Rams, and I know that the Niners are going against the Rams. Troy Aikman, NFC Championship game, like, listen to this sound. We can't get out of our head. So you bring up Jimmy G and we think of this.
I'm afraid that it's going to have to be Jimmy Garoppolo that gets it done.
Oh, we just laugh every time.
Let me ask you, Patrick, when there's certain quarterbacks, whether it's Bradford or Jimmy or whatever it is, and you guys are studying film all week long, and we'll get to today's NFL, and I got some questions about cover two high safety and Mel Kiper Jr., what the hell he said yesterday, which I thought was ridiculous.
Monte's head's going to explode.
Yeah, but what is it like in a film room when you know, oh man, this guy's going to throw a couple up, man? Are you guys fighting like, yo, I got to be in this position? What is that like, Patrick?
Oh, yeah, everyone in the DB room are licking their chops, man. It's like, oh man, it's not necessarily calling it a stat game, but you know you're going in the game knowing that some quarterback's going to give me an opportunity. You know what I mean? So while you watch your film, be like, all right, ooh, I might have opportunity to jump this because he believed in his arm strength that he can fit it in that window. Or you might have quarterbacks like a Kyler Murray that's a shorter stature that can't see over the line of scrimmage, so you may have opportunity for more tip balls. You know, so it's things like that when you're watching film that you're licking your chops on when you're getting ready to play for a game. And so going back to that, I made a comment last year when we played the 49ers. And
I was well aware, Patrick.
But the thing is, people took that in the wrong way because, like, I watch film, and I felt like there was some tails in that game to where I have an opportunity to snag one. And I did, and I just dropped two of them. Mm. You know, so that's where it just goes back. I wasn't, you know, talking down on Brock or anything like that. I'm a competitor. I watch film just like him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So my goal as a defensive back is to get an interception every time I step on the football field. But, you know, people took that the wrong way, and he did end up throwing two touchdowns on me. That was all good. But that's just the game,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you play long enough, you're going to get dunked on. You're going to dunk on somebody. That's how it works, you know? When you're breaking down Brock Purdy, like, in the film room, like, imagine the audience right now is part of the film room study. Like, what are you saying as you're watching him? And how would you describe him as a quarterback, and especially when you look over the landscape of other players that play that position?
So, like, for me, especially have an opportunity to play against Brock and have an opportunity to game plan against him and watch film. Like, he's almost like, it's just their offense. You know, they are an inside the numbers offense, passing game wise. So if you look at majority of Brandon Ayuk routes, he's running skinny slants. He's running, not skinny slants, he's running glance routes, skinny posts. You know, it's very rarely that he's running out routes or Brock Purdy is throwing the ball outside the numbers. So if you're able to pack the middle of the field and force the San Francisco 49ers or Brock Purdy to beat you with their left hand, then you can get them in a passing game. But the running game is what sets up the passing game for the San Francisco 49ers, setting up the play action, setting up the boots, setting up the screens. So that's a task in his own, trying to stop the run. And that's what makes them so lethal, because their running game is so efficient. It just makes everything come together.
Patrick Peterson here on the Morning Roast on 95.7 The Game, and Insider Calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. So Jay Gruden has some comments about the drop back passing game with the 49ers yesterday, saying, look, they're a great first and second down team, but on third down, their vertical passing game, I'm not too fond of it, basically, is what Jay Gruden said. So you're basically saying is, and we notice this too, all the everything inside the hash marks and everything with the 49ers. So you do believe their vertical passing game, if they have to throw outside the numbers consistently, they can be had in the passing game?
Yes, they can't do it. I mean, how many times have you seen the 49ers throw just a straight nine ball?
Yes, we don't see it often. I've been begging for it.
And you're not going to see it.
Wow.
You're not going to see it.
Is that a function of them never dialing that up? Is that just how they play off? Because, like, okay, for the laymen's out there, for the people that don't understand, because the nine is the, you know, go the go route, and obviously there's ball. A route yep. tree, but I don't know how many people understand that. So as best you can, break it down. Like, what makes Andy Reid's passing system so different from Kyle Shanahan's drop back passing system? If you were to just, you know, explain it to a bunch of 12 and 13-year-olds.
Right. Andy Reid is a little bit more spread out. Like he has those speedy guys on the outside of the numbers, and the quarterbacks that he normally gets have big arms that can make those long throws outside of numbers. And in his vertical game, far as his scheme, has always been down the field, even when he was with Philly.
Yep.
You know, now when he first got to San Francisco, when he first got to Kansas City, you remember he had Alex Smith, and he could not throw the ball down the field, so now he had to alter his game plan. But he still had the opportunity to take his shots, but it wasn't as often when he was with this with the Philadelphia Eagles, and now when he got Patrick Mahomes as his quarterback. So in his scheme, he understands how to spread guys out. And Andy Reid never really had a big time running game. Like, he had an efficient running game, but it really wasn't predicated off play action this, play action that. Andy Reid just understands the spacing aspect of it in the passing game. Now, Kyle, on the other hand, he understands the spacing of it in the running game, and his offense is more compact.
Interesting stuff there, because we see in the fourth quarter, Patrick Peterson, in these big games, whether it's the LA Rams in the NFC Championship game, whether it's the Kansas City Chiefs or the Super Bowl, it's a trend that happens where when they're behind in the fourth quarter, they're unable to come back and rally due to their vertical passing game. We got to get him back on. I think he fell off.
He was really good.
Yeah, no, well, he's coming back on. We'll get him back on.
Because Sean Payton made these comments, and we'll play them.
Jay Gruden
made these comments, and he referenced, hey, Sean Payton's passing system and Andy Reid's are very different yep. from Kyle Shanahan's. And